day.
And here we go.
Okie dokie. Hello, everybody. Good morning, Vietnam. I am on the road somewhere in California in another dreary, drabby hotel room. And I have a 1 hour hard stop because I am on the road. But nice to be with you all again. I always like to see all my friends and enemies who are here. If you're new to this event, what we do is this is a wonderful freestyle kind of Q&A thing where some questions are submitted in advance, but mostly, really, honestly, I'm here to just hang out with you all and talk about whatever you want to talk about. We started this well over 2 years ago, the whole COVID thing. I had no intention of it continuing, but it seems to have continued. So here we are. I asked Alyssa also to put up a couple thingies that I've got coming up, my only dream yoga retreat in person. This really stunning place I've never taught at before, but really beautiful outside of Aspen. So there's a link to that. And then Menla Nature Mind Retreat. I've been to Menla, but I've never taught there. And so to actually hang out there with Bob Thurman for a week, that's going to be fun. I'm super looking forward to that. And so what you can do, I will start by reading through a couple of the questions that did come in. But in the meantime, this is the time, either in the chat column, raise your hand. I'm basically here to just chat with you all and see what might be on your mind. Anything is free game, we're obviously within limits, right? So okay, so here we go. And I have to work off my phone instead of my other computer. So this is from Marta. Hi, Andrew. I would like to know the main difference between yoga nidra and dream yoga. I understand the main point of both is to be awake in deep sleep, delta sleep. Is that right? No, not quite. No. So yoga nidra, nidra is the Sanskrit word for sleep. And so you would think that yoga nidra, sleep yoga, would be connected more to sleep yoga in the Tibetan tradition, but it's actually not. So the point is not to be awake in deep delta sleep, at least as far as I'm aware of. It is sleep yoga in the Tibetan tradition, also called Ursal yoga, luminosity yoga. Yes, that's the point, is to be lucid in deep dreamless delta sleep. But yoga nidra is actually, of all the nocturnal meditations, yoga nidra is the closest to liminal dreaming. I'm sure at the highest, most refined levels, yes, the idea is to maintain awareness, lucidity through all states. But overtly, it's a very wonderful Hindu-based practice where through process of progressive kind of body scanning type thing, there's a big literature on this now. There's quite a bit out there. Radiant Luminosity, I think it was called. Tracy Stanley wrote a book. What's the name of it? Alyssa, you could probably Google it. She interviewed me a little over a year ago when her book came out. Really wonderful lady, Radiant something or other, Radiant Luminosity or something like that. She talks a lot about it, as does my friend Richard Miller. There's a bunch of people who work with yoga nidra. And so the idea with yoga nidra is basically to maintain this quality of relaxation, systematic, you could say almost lucid sleep onset in the liminal phase, usually hypnagogic phase, when you're actually tapering off into sleep. And if there's somebody listening that knows more about yoga nidra than I do, I am not an expert in yoga nidra. It's not one of my main practices, but it is definitely more connected to liminal dreaming than dream yoga. And again, because you're working with the mind, they obviously all have some relationships, because if you're working with developing a kind of lucidity slash awareness in any state, it's gonna have kind of repercussions in the others. But it's not the same, at least in the Tibetan world. Yoga nidra is not the same as dream yoga. It's not the same as sleep yoga. It's mostly connected to liminal dreaming or the hypnagogic, hypnopompic phases. Okay, cool. So here's the other one that came in. From Gary. I recently had an unexpected but significant moment of lucid dreaming in which I woke up in my dream, knew I was dreaming, and had a fleeting experience of luminosity in the dream. And Gary, if you're here, I would love to ask you what that means to you. And then I'll finish the rest of your comments, last question, because this is when people say luminosity, I'm not sure what exactly that means for you. Does it mean you had a, you saw some light in the dream?
I am here.
Oh, you are there. Fire away. Let's have a chat.
I think what I'm saying is I had a momentary sort of complete non-dual experience.
Beautiful. Then that is luminosity. You are correct. Because usually when people use that term, they're referring to some kind of light thing.
And no.
If, yeah. No. Okay. So tell me, let me ask you a little bit more about it, Gary. So this happened when you were actually in. Tell me a little bit about the actual experience, if you don't mind.
Well, it's been some weeks since I submitted this question.
Right.
And I'm afraid I can't really give you particulars of the dream.
Okay.
But I did do a kind of self-induction before I went to sleep. Very, very primitive, elementary kind of intention of which I believe you, maybe you have offered yourself as a technique.
And so say more about that. So you were literally creating the intention, like a dream incubation thing, that you wanted to have an experience of luminosity, or what were you doing that actually triggered this?
No, as I was lying down to go to sleep, I visualized, I did a bit of deity yoga.
Nice.
And I visualized myself lying with my head in the lap of the deity.
Beautiful.
With an intention to, I guess it's really a very elementary suggestion, you know, that I'm intending to have a lucid experience in a dream.
Nice, nice. And which, if you don't mind me asking, I'm curious which deity that might have been.
Generally, I choose Longchenpa.
Okay, well, that's a pretty good choice. You can't do much better than Longchenpa. So yeah, so if you're actually literally having, you know, luminosity, this is one of those terms that's often confused. It's fundamentally inseparable from emptiness. You probably know, right? Luminosity and emptiness are two sides of the same coin. And so what you said automatically pings that was an experience of luminosity. And so if you generally have that, and it sounds like you did, then high five, my friend. That's really awesome.
May I add just another note about this experience? The fact that it was brief does not really convey the impact that it had.
That's correct.
When I woke up, the fact that I knew I had awakened in a dream,
yep,
and had that experience, brief as it was,
yep,
was a dramatic, yep, sort of message. That right now, that is also a possibility, that this is also the dream.
That's beautiful. That's really great. That's spot on. Yes. So you basically, you know, you return to the screen of consciousness, so to speak. The display had been turned off. No waking state experience, no dreaming state experience, but the blissful so-called screen, background screen, was, so to speak, your experience. And at that level, as you know, probably, it wasn't really your experience because you weren't having it. It was having itself, right? And so it's like, this is actually an important point. This is a glimpse of the awakened non-dual experience. And in a very real way, you can't have it. And so when people say, I want to attain enlightenment, well, those are mutually exclusive terms. You actually can't attain enlightenment. Ego can't attend its own funeral. And so that in itself is revelatory, that when you have the experience, but when you have it, there's no you there. And that's one reason it's so impactful, because you're returning to to the matrix of reality. And it's a little bit like a near-death experience. I often say this. In fact, it is a type of death experience. You don't have to have an NDE over and over for it to change your life. And so if you have a true luminosity non-dual experience, these are game changers. It's a glimpse of the path of seeing, because they're so utterly foundational. And so even like you said, the brevity doesn't lessen the profundity. So even though it lasted, who knows how long, a couple of seconds, minutes, it's huge, because it really points out the nature of things. And so high five on that, that's really spot on. And then you also had here, Gary, let me just finish the rest of what you wrote, and we'll see if you want to run with this a little bit, since I know it's been a while since I've been on these Q&A things. So since I've, this is you speaking, since I've had other more substantial experiences of luminosity, I'm wondering if you have an opinion about whether any such prior experience might influence what might happen in a dream. Oh yeah, for sure. On a number of levels, one is that if you have a true experience of luminosity and you bring that experience, it's a little bit like in Hindu language, the difference between Turiya and Turiyatita. I actually like their framing of that. But if you actually have that, then the type of dream that you have that arises within that, it's in, if you're doing deity yoga, this is akin to the samadhi of suchness, if that language means anything to you. That everything, if you're doing full-blown yinam deity yoga, you may remember you recite the mantra Om Sabha Shuddha Sabhadharma Shambhava Surafam. So that theoretically is supposed to drop you into the samadhi of suchness, which is the non-dual state. And then from that state, you self-generate the image of the deity. Well, exactly the same thing can happen in the dream. And so what happens there is you have that type of experience. And then the dream that can arise within it, because it doesn't have to be just the screen. You can still have the display arising within it. In fact, that's really the point. Because if you just hang out in that total non-dual experience without any display, then what do you do when you come back into the display? Most people tend to lose the essence, right? And so this is a little bit long-winded response to a really great experience that, and what Tenzin Wangyal Rinpoche talks about is a clear light dream. These are the most advanced types of dreams where you're using this languaging, so I'm going to engage it with you. This is the union of generation and completion stage practice, where you're resting in the completion state. That's the non-dual thing. And then what happens in the dream is if it's really done properly, it's completely intentional. So it's a voluntary dream that arises to fuse with that experience of non-duality, i.e. the samadhi of suchness. And then this little advanced type of dream, then that's what's called a clear light dream, where generation stage and completion stage are happening simultaneously. And that's the whole point. So that's, I mean, that's fantastic. That's really great stuff. And so, you know, just continue. To try to, this is a type of pointing out or pointing in, where then the practice becomes one of stability, enhancement, augmentation, so that this doesn't become just a blip. Yeah, you know, it's a glimpse that then is transformed into a gaze, you know? And so that's really high five. That's a pointing out time transmission. So very good for you, my friend. Makes me smile.
Thank you.
Anything else from you around on that?
No, yeah. That's plenty.
Yeah. On one level, really nothing needs to be said, but you can use it in those types of ways, and it absolutely positively informs and transforms your dream. And then of course one further step, because this is connected to the previous question about this is real sleep yoga, that's a sleep yoga experience. So then one final step is, not only do you then take that samadhi of suchness, clear light, bring it into the dream is automatically a dream of clear light. But then what happens is you take it one step further. You still leave that light on, the light doesn't turn off, and then you wake up to this dream. And then this then is appears like what? It appears like an illusory form, right? That's what's called perfectly pure illusory form, see? And so this is the genius of the sort of thing. You have this experience, the light stays on, clear light dreams. The light stays on, when you wake up into this, you see this as a dream, see? And it's then all infused, and your experience then becomes one of non-duality, not just in the deep dreamless sleep, but through dream and also the waking state. That's called Buddhahood. So.
Well, just maybe a footnote here. The experience that I had in the dream was identical to the an experience of non-duality that I had previously had in waking state. So that was a complete confirmation, so to speak. You know, there was no mistake about it.
That's exactly right. That's a really good point, because that's what, exactly like you said, that's when you know, because you've met that correlative state of mind during the day. And so for people listening, how do you cultivate this? Well, by doing the practices that match this particular state of mind during the day, the formless meditations, right? Completion stage and your languaging, Dzogchen Mahamudra. And so, yeah, just really good stuff, my friend. Appreciate it. Thanks for sharing. Very cool. Love it. Okay, so do we have any live questions or dead questions?
Let me get you unmuted, baby. Okay.
Oh, Radiant Rest. Yeah, Radiant Rest. Tracy Stanley. That's it. She's a cool gal. I really like her.
Hello, Andrew.
Hello, dear.
Your answer to Gary really touches on a lot of what I have to cover.
Okay.
I use an aura ring, and about 2 or 3 months ago, I started having episodes of waking in the night and not being able to get back to sleep for hours, or waking early and not being able to get back to sleep. And my aura ring was logging it as REM sleep and sometimes as deep sleep. So that I found very curious. This last weekend, when I was in retreat with you, I decided my dream yoga was stalled. So I decided while I was in retreat to use galantamine for 3 nights and see if I couldn't crowbar something loose. And as you say, all heaven broke loose. I had some amazing dreams. The first night I started with very anxious dreams. I woke up with my heart pounding, panicking, and I was laying there. I literally can feel the bed, the temperature of the air. I can open my eyes and see my bedroom. And my aura ring is still seeing this as REM state. So I decided, I was lucid enough in that moment that I decided, let's go with it and see what we can do. I started being able to meditate in that state. I've never done that before. Right. So the second night, I was in the dreaming after the galantamine, and I was literally working through kleshas. First, it was shame. And in the dream, as it manifested, I got less and less attached to the shame and more in a state of bodhicitta towards the people who were perpetuating, deliberately trying to perpetuate the shame. And then it shifted to attachment, and then paranoia, and then anger and fear. And each time I walked through until I started to liberate it. And then I woke to this charmed hybrid state. And in that, I started being able to do generation and completion stage practice. Like you said, it started happening simultaneously. Right. And I thought, well, what should I chant tonight? And Yeshit Sogyal's retreat song came to me. You're familiar with that, right?
Well, I'm not sure exactly which one, because there's lots of these dohas, but.
It's at every appearance and every event are the mind's miraculous display. In the spacious expanse, I see nothing to fear. It's just reflexive radiance of mind's clear light and nothing else. Hence, there's no reason to react. All activity is my adornment, therefore better to rest peacefully in contemplative evenness. And that ran through my head spontaneously, and I started to laugh because in that moment, I realized they weren't words anymore. I was there. And I just stayed in that state. And that night, that state was logged as a 2-hour section of REM sleep. It was incredible.
Wow.
Now, on the third night, like it reversed. I had the crazy dreams first. The hybrid state first.
Okay.
And I started with the red lotus and the chant in the throat. And then it automatically defaulted to what I'd learned from Lama Suryadas with the white light in the forehead.
Okay.
And started to spin clockwise. And I could feel myself descend. So this was the first time I actually remained conscious going into the deeper states. And then the white light started to move from chakra to chakra, and it felt like I was being healed. It was amazing. And then it went into the dreams, and the crazy dreams were going on. And the last thing I remember from the crazy dream was this guy talking to these other women about me and putting up his hands like, what can I say? And he said, it's her beldy. Now, this is a word I never heard, but then my alarm went off and I woke up and I immediately Googled beldy, and it's a real word in Moroccan. It's very popular. It's very similar to like the Japanese ethos of finding beauty in imperfection.
Oh, nice.
It was just very, very cool that it turned out that it was a real word. But there was something I accessed through between the retreat with you and these dream states that I felt like I reached into some aspect of clear light nature that I feel there's a certain degree of non-recidivism that came along with it. So I've been feeling kind of spacey in my days because life has become very dreamlike. And I have to be very careful, like when I drive and stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if this is like my new normal.
Well, we'll see. I mean, we'll see. It's hard to say, but first of all, geez, I mean, between you and Gary, that's just fantastic. I love hearing this sort of thing. But you know, it's really interesting because I mean, so many things he said there are just so cool. One is, in fact, when you have like a pointing out transmission, and again, I'm tossing out particular terms for you and Gary that may not land with other people that are listening, and I hope that's okay with them. But when you have like a pointing out transmission or you have an experience of clear light, and as you know, often you're not entirely sure, right, if you've actually clicked into it. Well, one way is, in fact, to register what you registered, is that your experience does, in fact, become more dreamlike. It's every aspect of it. It's less real. It's more ephemeral, right? more ephemeral, less solid, and a little bit less dualistic. And so, I mean, it's just really great stuff. How stable that will be, I can't say. I think the most important thing is, well, let me ask you this before I give you my riff on it. What are you going to do with it now? Or how has it affected you? And what is your intention in so-called working with it?
Well, the first thing I've noticed is that I'm there's ego blowback. There always is whenever I make a big leap.
And so, how is that registering? How are you?
Like, wild emotions, really vivid, but it's interesting because when they start to arise for like a nanosecond, it grabs me. And then I immediately default to my dream states I had this past weekend, where it's like, I worked through this. I know that there's nothing to it. It's just emptiness. It doesn't have its hold on me like it used to. And that's real obvious.
That's colossal. I mean, that's exactly... Trogla Rinpoche speaks really beautifully about this. That's exactly one of the wondrous consequences of this, is that little previous crap show, it just continues to play out, but you'll find yourself not listening to it as much because you realize it's just like Yossi Shulga, just this kind of luminous, radiant display. And it doesn't have any more power over you. And this is really what absolute city is, right? When the world / your mind, whatever, no longer has power over you. And so that's no small thing. So the display is still there. The phenomenal world is still there. You see through it with your x-ray eyes. It appears to be a little bit more dreamlike. It doesn't have the same power that it did before. Same thing with the contents of mind. There's still some residue until the eighth consciousness is completely purified. There's going to be hiccups. That's the recidivism part, if you capitulate, reify, and go with those. But as you become more spacious, and the enemy of that is spacey, then it arises, it self-liberates, doesn't have the same traction. And then it just becomes even, in a certain way, it gets thinner and thinner and thinner. And then eventually, all sorts of things can happen. But really the most important thing, perhaps, if I might interject, is don't take it too seriously. Relate to that experience in the same way you're relating to everything else. Don't try to reestablish it. Because you will notice that one of the characteristics of what brings those experiences about is what? Tremendous openness. And so ego can come in, as you intimated, and what does it want to do? It sticks to everything. So it'll stick to that and try to reinstate it. That doesn't mean you can't aspire, but there's a difference between aspiration and grasping, right? And so the best way to take this experience, nyam, and turn it into realization, dukpa, is to let it go. And then that way it'll just be another one of these endless displays that does not become problematic in the slightest unless you take it too seriously and try to reify it and try to repeat it. That's just awesome stuff. Makes me smile. That's really beautiful. Good for you. Cool. And soaking in all this stuff too, you know, like the Pure Mind programs and everything else. That's the other thing that, I mean, what was I stressing throughout that program, right? The utter immediacy of the ultimate pure land. That you don't have to wait till you die to enter ultimate gravity, clear light mind. You're in it right now. And so the fact that maybe some of that actually reached you, which sounds like you did, again, it's this wonderfully empowering thing that what we're looking for is hiding in plain sight is much more obvious than we can imagine. We just have to open to it. And so the fact that it's like, oh no, Gary didn't have that experience. Oh no, you didn't have that experience. You absolutely did have that experience. And that gives you a sense of like, oh my gosh, it really is. It's like right here, right now, always. I just need to open to it and recognize it. And so that's really, really cool. So thanks for sharing that.
Thank you. Can I just ask you quickly, state I'm experiencing, is that something you've discussed? Maybe I've missed through the year, that hybrid state where it's like, I definitely feel like I'm awake, but I'm experiencing liminal states. My ring is saying I'm dreaming. Sometimes it's deep sleep.
Yeah. These hybrid states are not uncommon. You know, the kind of the gross classifications that we have of waking, dreaming, sleeping, even neurologically now, when they get more refined with fMRIs and these brain imaging techniques, they're discovering that the brain, parts of your brain can be asleep and awake and dreaming all at the same time. And so the correlative experience for you in consciousness would be this malleable hybrid state. It's a liminal state. And those are just fantastic. They're really a wonderful kind of bleed throughs of the ultimate nature, what I say, the ultimate democratic nature of all experience. And so this kind of hybridization can lead to a deeper quality of the great equanimity, one taste, where you have this playful, lighthearted, open relationship to whatever arises. And yes, when you come out of it, you can say, oh, that was a hybrid state, that was a this state, that was a that state. That's great, that's helpful to understand. But when you're actually in it, don't label it, just simply witness it. Just say, oh, like, wow, look at this. Oh, that's amazing. And then if you do that, then the radiant display of it all just like your Chesogyo just keeps dancing, right? So you're this is a Kimi experience, right? You're sky dancing in the sky of your own mind. And so that's pretty cool. High five. I love it, you guys. Makes me happy. Really. Thanks for sharing. Beautiful, beautiful. Okay.
All right. We've got Marianne with her hand up.
Hi, Marianne.
Hi, Andrew.
How are you?
I'm great. So, I love the...
I have to ask you a question. Are you an artist? Are those all your works back there?
Yes.
I wondered. Those are gorgeous.
Oh, I don't have the light on. I don't think you can see them. But yes, I've been a painter for 35 years.
Oh my God, I love those. That's great. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I noticed that the other day and I said, is she an artist?
Oh, thank you so much. And I just really want to appreciate what Debbie just shared. I can relate so much to what you shared and with, you know, the hybrid state and the liminal state. And I know I mentioned briefly at the end of our retreat Sunday that I've come to really love the middle of the night when I'm awake.
We are God, right?
Yeah, I used to despise it. And now I consider it, I think you called it the hour of God.
Right.
And it really feels that way. And so, you know, I'll get up and go to the bathroom and go back to bed and begin to meditate. And as I shared with you, I'll start to see colors and white light and different kinds of sensations of brilliance when I'm awake. But then when I start to go into the liminal space, I often, it seems as though I leave my body. And at the moment I leave my body, there's always this loud, deep whooshing sound that goes with it. That's my first question. Like, what is that? I've had this happen off and on my whole life. I've never been able to talk to anybody about it.
Yeah. Well, you can talk to weirdos like me about it. Like you're in a certain way, this is my playful language in it, you're flushing away from materialism, right? So the whooshing sound is not at all uncommon.
Huh.
Where people often report this auditory thing, both leaving and coming back, this kind of whooshing thing. So that's not at all uncommon. But let me ask you this. So I'm curious, what are the parameters that make you say this was an out-of-body thing? I mean, you literally see yourself coming out and you're looking down with the lucidity, or say more about that.
Yeah, it's not so much that I see myself, but I feel myself. And so because I'm in this liminal state, it feels absolutely like I just got up or just went to the left of my body or the right of my body, or that my legs are 5 feet above my head. And then if I wake up a little bit, I go, oh, my body's over here, it's not over there. So I physically feel like my body has moved in and around like my bed and stuff, when my body's actually not moving. You know, it's a physical sensation that my body's sort of around my body.
I got it. And how does it feel Emotionally, affectively. I mean, what's the correlative kind of emotional response to that?
It's pleasant. It's curious. I don't really know what's going to happen next or where I'm going to go next or how far away. Sometimes, I mean, at some point, then at that point, I'll just go into a sleep. So then I'll just start dreaming or whatever. But then, and this is a little bit embarrassing, I've never shared this in public, but when I do go back into my body, I kind of whoop back into my body, I have an orgasm.
Oh, nice, good for you. How was that?
I don't know why. I mean, it's happened my whole life, and it's just the actual act of landing back in my body. Yeah. I have an orgasm. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that's great. I'm trying to think. Oh, her name will come to me. She writes about this all the time. She's one of the coolest. Her name will come to me, I'm sure, during the course of this riffing together. She's one of the preeminent voices in the world of lucid dreaming, and I can't surface her name right now, but she's written a lot about this sort of thing.
Really? Because I've never been able to talk to anybody that knew anything about that part.
Yeah, and I will send me your, if I can't remember, for Lord's sakes, senior moment. What is your last name, Marianne?
Bennett.
Send Alyssa or send me privately your email. I'll send you her name. She endorsed the dreaming the book I wrote with Harbinger Press. If anybody has it, she was sweet enough to endorse it for me on the back. But she's written a lot about this sort of thing, and I would probably defer a little bit more to her riffs on that sort of thing. But you know, it's amazing. All sorts of quite remarkable experiences can take place, and this is absolutely not at all unheard of. But I'm curious. So, where does it leave you, and what do you, so to speak, do with it? I mean, is this something that's happened with some regularity for you? And how do you bring like a path quality to this?
It does happen with regularity. Like I say, at that point, then I usually just go to sleep. It's, by then it's usually around 3 a.m. and I treasure those 2 hours from 3 to 5. Then I usually have some amazing dreams. Yeah, sometimes lucid dreaming, not as frequently. But even when they're not lucid, they're like just these very, luminous, rich kind of dreams. So I don't know. It's always just been in that liminal state when I've had this feeling I'm leaving my body. And then I'll just add one last thing. Since I've moved into this house, I don't know if it's this house or if it's just the different phase in my life or what's happened. I'll get the whooshing sound, I'll leave my body, and now it's as if there's an entity at the bottom of my feet,
yeah,
actually pulling my energy out from my feet. So instead of me just leaving my body, it feels like there's somebody there kind of pulling me out of my body.
And does that feel, is that a little bit unsettling? I mean, how does that register with you?
A little bit. It's not particularly unsettling, but it's not particularly like a being that I feel particularly drawn to. It's kind of just curious, like who is this guy?
So let me ask you other questions around this. And so are you able to actually move your physical body when you're in that kind of space? Because I'm trying to figure out if you're—
No, I can't move my physical, I can't move.
But you're in REM sleep because your body's paralyzed. And so what you're experiencing is you're actually experiencing a type of sleep paralysis, which is, again, this is actually worth knowing because it's just helpful to know the kind of landscape of the territory that you're experiencing so that you just have some idea when you're experiencing these sorts of things, like where I am, what's happening, and perhaps how to relate to it. And so because you couldn't move your body, which again is usually when these experiences take place, you feel an external agency. Sometimes it feels threatening. Sometimes it feels sort of neutral. Very, very often this happens with the sleep paralysis state. And this occurs in REM sleep. And I'll say something about this, how it can be the OBE thing. When you're in REM sleep, you're experiencing, normally you're in sleep atonia. Your body's like a rag doll. You're paralyzed. It's nature's way of preventing you from acting out your dreams. And so when you have what you're having, that's an experience of sleep paralysis, which is when you recognize that you're in sleep atonia. You can't move. That's the key. You can't speak. You can't move except for your eyes with the throat, yeah. And your diaphragm, your breathing. And so that can help you understand when you have it again. It's like, oh, this is sleep paralysis. How cool. Instead of like getting wigged out or freaked out, because sometimes that can happen. You feel threatened, violated, whatever. You can't really move. Someone's at the other bed pulling on you or whatever. And so the reason I also mentioned this, and this is going to be a little bit more nuanced, is most, and again, I'm not sure, I'd have to get some more questions. Most so-called out-of-body experiences in the nocturnal mind are actually various forms of altered embodiment connected to dreams. And I'm not saying that's what's happening with you. I just don't know. I don't have enough information.
But wait, say that again. What do you mean altered embodiment?
You're actually not out of your body. It's, it's an altered embodied experience, not an actual out-of-body experience.
Okay.
So I can direct you to some literature that you may be interested in reading about this, because most people, when they say they're having OBEs, they're actually not having OBEs. They're actually having an altered body experience. It's a type of dream or hyperlucid dream.
Huh.
Evan Thompson has written really beautifully about this in his book, Waking, Dreaming, Being. And also Susan Blackburn in the anthology, Sleeping Brain, Waking Mind, or something like that, with Jane Dockenbach. This is helpful to know because, and again, it doesn't in any way dismiss what you're experiencing, not on a slide. Mm-hmm. It just helps you understand, hey, was I really out of my body?
Right.
In an altered dreamscape. And most of the time you're in an altered dreamscape. And there are ways to actually test it. So next time you have it, you can do several things. One is try to remember to spin when you're in that space. So you wake up and you think you're outside of your body. Mm-hmm. One way to suss whether you're having an OBE or a hyperlucid dream is literally, I remember what Andrew said, I'm gonna do the whirling dervish thing, I'm just gonna spin.
Okay.
If you spin and then you stop spinning and the scene is completely different, you're dreaming. If you spin and you stop and it's the same, you're having an OBE. You see the difference? Because when if you ever try this is one way to change the scene in a lucid dream if you don't like what's happening, is you spin. And then when you stop, 99% of the time when you stop, the scene will be different than
right. Right, right, right.
If you have that, that's a dream / lucid dream. That's not an OBE.
Right.
The other thing, and I've done this I do these all the time to test, because sometimes I can't tell.
Yeah.
Like I was doing this thing over the Pure Lands weekend where I was trying to go to Sakavati because it's part of the dream yoga practice. And I had this, I didn't share it with the group because there was not enough time, but I had this really awesome dream. And I said, gosh, I wonder if I'm in Sukhavati, because I was doing the Amitabha thing and I really wanted to meet Amitabha that night. And I woke up and it was a lucid, I wasn't sure if it was a lucid dream or, hey, am I in Sukhavati? And so I conducted a couple tests. Mm-hmm. What to do. One of which was spinning. The second one was actually trying to read something. And so you will find that when you're in an out-of-body experience, you can read. If you're having a hyperlucid dream, it's really hard to read. In fact, it's almost impossible. And so I was sitting there trying like Jesus to read this thing, and I couldn't read it. And I said, this is not an OBE. This is just a really high-level lucid dream. And so anyway, these are just really fun, cool things that you can play around with so that when you're having these experiences, you can say with some authority, it's like, oh, wow, this is what's happening. This is where I am. Because this will help you also when you're dead, when you're in the bardos, so that you actually know that you're in the bardos and that you're not just having a dream. So all this stuff isn't just like philosophical mumbo jumbo. This is the sort of stuff that can help you create signposts and certain metrics and certain tests where you can tell actually where your mind is when you're having these particular experiences.
So, well, this is so helpful, and I've never heard of an altered body experience. So it might be that I am very aware of being in my room.
Yeah. But check out, I really recommend these books. If you don't have them anyway, especially Evan's book, it's really brilliant. Waking, Dreaming, Being. He's a really, really sharp scholar, and he has an entire chapter on this stuff. as does Jane Gockenbach. So I would check it out, because then when you read it, you'll go, oh, okay, that makes sense to me. That's kind of what was happening.
Oh, finally, a resource. Thank you so much.
Welcome so much. And Myra pinged it. It is Patty Garfield, Patricia Garfield. So she's the Dreaming Gal. She's written all about, I don't remember all her books, but she's written a ton about the kind of orgasmic quality of these types of dreams. Huh. One of the reasons she's like really big into it. Hey, whatever makes you happy, right? So she has, again, I don't have it with me, so I can't recall. She has one particular book on this. I think the title itself is pretty explanatory about this kind of orgasmic quality of having these sorts of dreams. So she's great. She's one of the real forces in this field. So see, all these magical correlative benefits that you get from doing this stuff.
Oh, I'm so grateful. Thank you so much for your time, everybody. Thank you.
I love hearing these stories. Thanks, everybody. See ya.
See ya.
Yeah. Hey, Andy.
Andrew, are you able to move a little closer to the computer? I think some people are having trouble hearing.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Too close.
I have to find the middle way. Right. Not too close, not too far away. Yeah, I'm definitely, this is not my usual computer. I'm in this hotel room. So anyway, it is what it is.
Fire away. I am on the same theme as everybody else. I was in the 3-day class.
Okay.
What an experience that I've had since then. Sunday night, I go to bed doing Om Abhitabha Hri and asking to go to the Pure Lands. And actually, I think the first night I asked to see the Pure Lands, and what happened was I saw a picture frame or a big window, and through that I saw the Pure Lands, but I was about 50 feet away. I was not in it. Was a very interesting experience because it's so contrasted with the space around it. It was as if I was looking through a window.
Cool. And so Wendy, backpedal for just a second. So where were you when you had this experience? Is it when you were sleeping or?
Yes, sleeping.
Okay.
Sleeping. And then Monday night we had the meditation class.
Or Joe, yeah.
Which I love with Jeffrey Stevens. And the whole time he was talking, and he didn't lead a meditation. But by the end, I felt like I just shifted enough that I went into that experience where everything turned into light, you know, even though he was talking and everybody else was talking and everything was happening. I just felt like, oh, this is the waking state of being in that place. And it lasted a much longer time than I get to have it last in dreams usually.
Oh, wow.
I don't know why. It was really lovely. And then that night I had a dream again where I asked for Pure Lands.
Yeah.
And I wasn't lucid, but I was walking on the mountainside with Omotaba. And I knew it was him. And there wasn't anybody else around. And all there was this vast, endless space and this hillside mountainside we were walking on. And I just woke up so happy. And it didn't matter. It wasn't a lucid dream.
Right.
It was just really precious. So I just wanted to express this to you because it just feels like, wow, I didn't really know it while I was in the class.
Yeah.
How much things had, you know, that a real shift was taking place because, you know, and to thank you. And Debbie, I have an aura ring and the same thing happens to me. It thinks I'm sleeping when I'm meditating. And I think it's reading our heart rates. And so our heart rate goes way down and it thinks we're sleeping.
Yeah.
I am also awake in the middle of the night for hours and have been for years. And so that's when I get to meditate, you know, and have these experiences. I love that time.
Yeah.
So I feel very at home with everybody. And part of the experience with Jeffrey in that class was seeing the light, but also the sense that everybody in the class were different parts of me. Like people came on and asked questions, and I knew they were expressing a part of me that I did not have to embody, that allowed me to be in the state I was in. So everybody that expressed, I was like, oh yeah, I've been there. That's a part of me. That's a part of me. That's a part of me. And them expressing it or feeling it allowed me to be in this other space.
Yeah.
It was quite a lovely experience. And I just wanted to appreciate you for all of it.
I really love this. Like, today's like the experience session. This is great. I love hearing these sorts of things. And especially coming out of like a program that we did, because again, it's like when we start to drop our barriers, we start to lower our guard, we really make ourselves more available to these vast wonders of the mind and reality. And it's much more immediate and available than we think.
Mm-hmm.
We are the ones that drop these veils in front of our eyes constantly. We just have to open and relax. And when we have this kind of group mind, this kind of connective tissue of the group and this kind of group consciousness that takes place, the fact that we can actually do this in cyberspace, right? We're not even in the same room together, also is really, really cool. You know, it kind of talks about the dimensionless quality of where we're going when we explore these sorts of things. And so all I can say is just fantastic. I mean, everything today is just really, really great. And like with everything else, these are wonderful things. We celebrate them, but also like with Debbie's and other experiences, we just simply release them and let them go. And we were like, oh, that's cool. It's kind of a pointing out. There's, oh, that's cool. That's really interesting. And then we just continue to celebrate, but then release, celebrate, but then release. So I'm not sure what else to say. I mean,
nothing. I just really wanted to thank you and actually thank the whole group, because it feels like a group experience. It makes, you know, raises the tide, so to speak, that allows, you know, an experience I wouldn't have on my own. Yeah,
exactly. And so if, I mean, again, I always ping like references for people who want to learn more. Christopher Bache, he's the guy I did the LSD interview with. He's coming back. But he wrote a book I just finished reading called The Living Classroom, which really talks about this sort of thing, the kind of collective group mind that emerges in situations like this. So if you want to learn a little bit more about this sort of thing, his book is worth looking at. You know, it will just give you a little bit more of like, oh, okay, I can see how that.
I used to lead groups, and this was a big part of my lead-in, was how the group would change everything.
Yeah, isn't it? It's what makes it so rewarding. Yeah. So thanks for sharing. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Take care.
All right. We'll get you unmuted, Glenn.
Hey.
Hi, Andrew.
How are you, my friend?
Pretty good. I just wanted to pass by you something, a change that's been happening in my dreaming, and it seems to have been for the last 2 months.
Okay.
So a real focus on sort of like lucidity in dreaming has gone away. And instead, and it sort of began to happen last year when I woke up in the middle of the night, and I would say, okay, I should just sit down and do open awareness meditation. And so, it started around then, and it keeps going on, that a lot of my focus is now, because I record my dreams on a phone thing. So I remember things that I wouldn't necessarily remember when I'm awake.
Yeah.
Everything now seems to happen at the end, just before I'm waking up.
Yeah.
And so it's in liminal, it's sometimes liminal hypnagogic, if I'm going back to sleep and in 15 minutes, or it's liminal hypnagogic stuff.
Yep.
And there'll be these things where I know I'm aware, but to me, this is not lucid, what I am seeing.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm having an aware, non-lucid dream.
Yep.
Or in a lot of cases, I'm aware that I'm thinking, but I'm realizing my thinking is scoping out a whole dream.
Yep.
Then when I go to what my dream objective was, which largely is to lucidly dream in order to understand what the emergent rules in a dream are and play with them, I realized when I look back at my notes in these liminal things that that was actually what I was doing, although I didn't understand it at the time. And I'm just, I guess what I should do is just accept this.
Yes.
I'm focusing in on this part that is probably important for me to, oh, and this also comes after about a whole bunch of samsaric dreams, big, long samsaric dreams that, you know, I would write down later, though I wouldn't necessarily remember them otherwise, right?
Yeah, yeah. So a bunch of things there. I mean, really cool stuff. So like with you, the more interesting, compelling things tend to happen just before I wake up. I think there's some exclamation point that takes place that way, because when it happens that way, you tend to remember them more. They have a little bit more impact. So I would say, I don't know, 80%, if I had to guess, of the really impactful dream experiences I've had tend to occur like right around there. Because then when I wake up, it's like, oh, geez, there it was. And I can remember it very, very clearly versus something happening in the middle of the night. And the other thing that comes to mind, Glenn, is all the, you know, somewhat connected to the other comments, is there's so many collateral benefits when we do this sort of thing, that when we're working with these nocturnal practices, yes, we have certain targeted so-called objectives, attain lucidity in the dream, work with the stages of dream yoga, attain lucidity in the dreamless state, fantastic stuff. But there's all these other things that happen, which one of which is just this more sensitive, heightened awareness to the way the mind displays itself throughout the entire night, irrespective of particular classifications of experiences related to dream yoga or sleep yoga, right? And so this is very often the way it works for me. I may not have an overt lucid dream one night, but there's a quality of liminal awareness, lucidity takes place, you know, relatively constantly. And I'm just simply more aware of all the different manifestations, the different play that my mind takes in the nocturnal arena that I never had before. And so this is why I never really get wigged out at all if I don't have a lucid dream. If I'm in a drought period for a while, it doesn't wig me out on the slightest, because there's still all this other stuff kind of happening. And so I think that's the most important thing from what I'm hearing from you, is just recognizing the kind of just the scope of what these practices are all about, that you can really expand them to include virtually everything that happens when you're working with these subtle dimensions, both on and off the cushion. And so, I mean, that's what comes to mind around that. Celebrating the display of your mind under any circumstance, and then just the utter delight, and then the constancy. You know, you just keep going, and then you'll have a hyper lucid dream. Nothing will happen for a while. It's like the stock market. You know, it just goes up and then it crashes. It goes up and then it levels. It's all over the damn place. And so, maybe one of the take-home messages connected also to Debbie's and others today is just the quality of equanimity, receptivity to whatever arises. You know, I don't mind what happens. I'm open to whatever arises. And then you'll find that this quality of awareness, then it just continues. It continues to grow. You're more aware, more aware, more aware, until fundamentally you're aware all the time. So something like that.
Thank you.
Yeah. Always nice to see you, Glenn. Take care, my friend.
Thank you.
Okay, Jerry, one more, and then I do have to run, so this is perfect timing. Fire away, Jerry.
This is a very factual, can you hear me?
I can.
Okay, this is a very factual question about things that you have mentioned in previous talk sessions. And, you know, you said you did this 5-year retreat in Nova Scotia. And you said, you know, various ways, there were 8 men and 8 women in the retreat you took. Yes. Well, in your last talk session, you said 2 sentences very briefly and then went on. And you said when you finished the retreat, there were like 3 or 4 men and 3 or 4 women.
Yeah, we lost half. We lost about 50%. Yeah.
What happened? Why'd they leave? Or do you have any idea?
They all went insane. Just kidding. Just kidding. I couldn't resist, right? I couldn't resist. You know, for a number of, there were a couple real life situations where people, there was a couple, so that's 2 people. They had a daughter who was going through some really heavy stuff. Okay. They have to leave to take care of her. So right. There were 2 or 3 situations like that. where just the real world came crashing in, so to speak. And they others, there were a couple people that I don't want to say too much because it's not my purview to really comment, but there are a couple people that honestly should not have been there. And, really? And then it self-selects at a certain point. It's like, hey, this is not for me kind of thing. So between those two, you're a good listener. Yeah, we started with eight and then we ended up with, I think, eight. Actually we had five rooms. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 8, and 8, 16. And then, yeah, then the attrition was close to 50%. And so that's not uncommon for these sorts of things. Honestly, it's not unusual.
Oh, no, that sounds very reasonable. You know, I find it, you know, difficult to put my mind around. You have 16 people who just, you know, take 5 years out of their life like that. So I find what you're saying is very, very, you know, practical and understandable.
It's not an easy thing to do, right?
Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks a lot, Andrew.
Yeah. Thanks, Jerry. So thank you, everybody. Hey, it's nice. Let me just put on the gallery thing. And it's always nice to wave to everybody, all my friends and enemies. It's so nice to see everybody. The usual thing next week, I think I'm covering Monday. I'm not entirely sure. I have to look at my schedule. But otherwise, we're kind of back on track when I get in town. Sorry, I have to cut it a little bit short today. But that's the way it rolls. So nice to see everybody. We'll dedicate, if it speaks to you, dedicate the merit to all beings, especially the poor people in Ukraine and Russia. Keep them in our minds and hearts as they're going through some pretty challenging times. But otherwise, thanks, Alyssa. So nice to see everybody. We'll stay in touch, and I will see you in the dream world or elsewhere. Ciao, ciao.